Good morning. It's Saturday, November 1st, and you're listening to The Radiator, 105.9 FM, WOMMLP, in Burlington, Vermont. I'm Shayla Shapiro, your host for Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. Write the Book features interviews with authors, poets, illustrators, agents, and editors. Write the Book features interviews with authors, poets, illustrators, agents, and editors. Today on Write the Book, you'll hear a conversation with Rita Murphy, author of novels for young adults. Rita grew up surrounded by stories. After her son was born, she discovered her love of storytelling and began writing short stories. In 1999, her first novel, Night Flying, won the Delacorte Press Prize at Random House Children's Books and was voted one of the best books for young adults by the American Library Association and Smithsonian Magazine in 2000. It's been translated into 7 languages. Chosen a flying start author by Publishers Weekly, Rita Murphy is the author of 5 young adult novels, Night Flying, Black Angels, Harmony, Looking for Lucy Buick, and Bird. She studied writing at the University of Vermont and dance at the Naropa Institute in Boulder, Colorado. She's been a creative writing instructor at the Monteverde Friends School in Monteverde, Costa Rica, a guest author in Vermont Public Schools, and is currently on the faculty of the Breadloaf Young Writers Conference in Middlebury, Vermont. She lives with her husband and son in Burlington and is currently at work on her next novel. When I spoke to Rita last month, I began by asking her to talk about her writing process.
When I first started writing, I took a class at the University of Vermont. It was an evening class at Church Street Center. This is a long time ago.
Yeah.
And the class was about just writing whatever came and just writing. And it just to begin to start the words flowing. So once that started, it was so much fun for me. I realized I had all this inside of me that wanted to come out. And oftentimes when I was doing that free writing, mm-hmm. it didn't make much sense at all. But the experience of it was so freeing to just write, and sometimes in the writing some really interesting things came out. So that's been the way that I've continued to write. So I don't ever write. I mean, sometimes I'll have an idea. I'll wake up in the morning and I'll have a feeling about a place or mm-hmm. a character or something from a dream, and I'll just sit down and just start writing. Or sometimes I'll have like a first sentence that comes out, and then I just write and I just see what happens. So it's kind of an adventure for me. And it keeps it fun and fresh. I never use outlines or anything like that. So I just kind of do a sentence and then another sentence. I'm not even really kind of conscious that I'm writing sentences, but it just kind of unfolds. And that's always the reason why I realize why I love to write, is when I can be in that place where I'm just letting go and I'm just letting it happen. Mm-hmm. And I'm trusting that the words will come. It's kind of like I used to run a lot, mm-hmm. and I used to live in the country in north of Montpelier for about 6 years. So I would run in the evenings because mm-hmm. it was a time of day where everything else was finished, and I loved running in the evenings because it was really quiet. But sometimes it would be completely dark when I was running, and sometimes there wouldn't be a moon or anything. But there was little houses, you know, along the way, so there was like a little light in the window. So I would, you know, even though it was completely dark where I was, I could sort of see in the distance there was this little light. And there, it was this, I say that because it was a similar experience to how I write in a way, is that sometimes I'm just writing in the dark. I really have no idea where it's going, and then there's just like this little light.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, great, you know, this next, you know, place that I can go from.
Right.
And
right.
To me, when I'm in that place, that's the joyful part for me about writing.
Exciting.
It's effortless, and it doesn't feel like I'm working at all. It's just
right.
Like it's just playing.
Now, does that tend to continue as you are into a project that you're working on? I mean, do you still find, you know, chapter 7, you're still able to kind of just do the free writing to get going, and that takes you through it?
Yeah, I sometimes when I'm first writing, like when I first wrote my first book, Night Flying, I just wrote it in one huge chunk. It really wasn't divided into chapters. Sometimes I didn't even have paragraphs in it. And so sometimes that is how I write, is I'll write out the whole story, but the sort of skeletal structure of the story. I'll mm-hmm. write out the whole story to get it as it comes out, because I just have to get it out. And then when I go back and say, okay, here's here's the next chapter. Or, well, I, you know, I'll have a feeling of, okay, the chapter ends here, and sometimes I will mark that as I'm going.
Right.
But yeah, I try to start with, even if I'm writing and I'm like, okay, that's the end of the chapter, and so something new is going to start, I'll have a little feeling about how that's going to start. Just in my head, I'll see like an image of the characters on a beach or something, and so I'll just start on Tuesday morning, you know, and then I'll just go with that. And I will have a general sense as the story unfolds what's happening. Mm-hmm. But in the case of my newest book with Bird, there's a whole mystery that runs through it, which I had really right. no idea how it was going to resolve itself until it did. And I realized that that was a good way, in a way, to write a mystery, because there was no way I could give anything away ahead of time, because I really had no idea until it happened. But at the same time, I had to do, in retrospect, after I got the story out, I had to go back and kind of create some backstory to explain the mystery and all that kind of thing,
sure.
too. So it's not totally just free writing all the time.
Right.
But a lot of the main part of the story is for me.
So my next question, you maybe covered a little bit already, but how does a novel generally start for you, with an image or a line or a character? And so when you sit down to free write, is it generally a line that you have in your head at the beginning?
No, it's really all those things that you mentioned. You know, sometimes I'll just have a feeling inside of me for a day or two or a week or even longer, or I'll hear a conversation or someone will say something that really intrigues me, and mm-hmm. I'll just feel like, oh, there's something there.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes I'll sit down and I'll just write out that image or that feeling, and then eventually, you know, a sentence will come or words will come. But every time it's very different.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends. And sometimes it's a short story, so that's a very different kind of a feel. It's a little more, that's just different than a longer piece.
Now, do you write short fiction for teens, or have you written?
I just write it for myself.
Oh, okay.
At the moment, I actually started out writing short stories long before I ever wrote a young adult novel. That's what I did, short stories, you know, sort of the 8-page short story.
Right, right.
And actually Night Flying and Black Angels were both short stories, the beginnings of short stories, actually, originally, and then they became novels.
So were they originally not young adult short stories?
No, they weren't. They were just stories. And actually Night Flying was a short story that I had started, and I had written not very much, maybe a few pages. I brought it to a writing group I was in at the time, and one of the women wrote children's books, and she told me, you have to take that, turn it into a young adult novel, enter it in this contest at Random House. And that's what I did.
Oh, wow.
And that's how I started, you know, writing young adult novels. But it originally was just a short story, an adult short story, I thought. Very
so was that
different.
Contest your first publication?
It was.
Winning that contest?
Yes.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
That's so exciting.
Yeah,
that
was. It was really, really great. Because I hadn't really sent out too much prior to that.
Right.
So.
What was the name of the contest?
It's the Delacorte Press Prize for First Young Adult Novel.
Okay.
Random House puts it on every year, and I think the deadline's usually December 31st, at least it was at that time. So I started Night Flying in September.
Wow.
And I just wrote, at that time it had to be 100 pages, so I just wrote like crazy. That's one reason why it was probably just one big paragraph.
So at that point you had a short story, like 8 pages or 10 pages, that your friend had seen.
It was only the first, maybe 3 pages of the story.
Wow.
That was the beginning, which was good because I wasn't too far into it that I thought it was going to be something else. So yeah, she just loved the characters and the setting, and so yeah, I just went from those 3 pages to, you know, 100, and I really went right up to the deadline, almost didn't make it, but I just thought, I'm going to, you know, send it in as it is.
Right.
And they really liked the story, and they could see past the grammatical errors, probably.
It sounds almost like, in addition to the class you took where you learned how to free write at the Church Street Center, that deadline sort of made you free write, because how else could you have done it if you were spending a lot of time thinking?
I'm really better when I write quickly, and actually Bird came out that way too. It's much better when I write that way, when I just can't think about it too much, because then anything to get me out of my own way when I'm writing is the best thing. So if I can get out of the way, and sometimes doing it quickly helps me to do that, then I don't, you know, get that critical voice like, oh, what do you, you know,
what's
that doubt or anything to come in. There's no time.
What's this mystery about? What's going to happen?
Right, right. Just don't even worry about it. Just keep keep writing.
I'm curious if you have any particular ways of developing character so that you get to know the people you're writing about better.
Yeah, that's always, people have asked me that before, and it's interesting because I'm not a, sometimes when I hear people talking about books and character development and plot, I don't feel it that way. Like, it's a very felt sense for me about the characters. So they reveal themselves in the writing. Like, I have a feeling about them, and I just sort of know certain things about them just from what comes out in the writing. They must be within me because I feel them strongly. I think it's just if I just focus on the writing and I just focus on, I do a lot of listening in a sense, like I'm just listening for the story, for the characters to speak.
Do you study or are you familiar with mythology and legend at all? Does that influence your work at all, do you think?
I think I've always been interested in mythology, legend. I'm sure that I've read a lot of myths and legends along the way. I have done a lot of work with my dreams, and so sometimes dreams are very symbolic, and so I've always been interested in that, the nature of dreams, and the stories, and the images that come forth in dreams, and the characters, the sort of the, I guess people would say archetypes, or, you know, traditional kinds of characters that would show up in dreams. I've always been interested in sort of mystery, and what's kind of underlying things that are not spoken of or
and
be understood.
Probably just growing up in our culture, there are certain legends and folklore that are just part of who we become.
Grow. That's true. My grandfather was a storyteller, you know, verbal, like he would just speak stories out, and he was Irish. My family's Irish, of course, so he really believed in all of that, leprechauns and wee folk and banshees, and just all those kinds of things were so real to him, and he would tell us, of course, those stories over and over again.
Yeah.
I think that's part of maybe that storytelling, that kind of Irish myth.
Yeah, all that. So can you talk about your new novel, Bird, and how it came about?
Sure. I was actually helping a friend who's a filmmaker in Vermont here. He's done a lot of short films, and he was interested in doing a longer film. But he's such a beautiful filmmaker with images and the visual, but he was a little concerned about actually having a script or how to write a longer piece. So he asked me if I would just think a little bit about this project he was thinking about. It was going to be like a sort of a film noir and set in this small town in like the 1960s in Vermont. Very different, of course, than my story. And he said, you just, you know, maybe come up with some images or just anything that could help me. So that was my, at the time, this was in the fall. This was October.
Of what year?
Of 2006.
What's his name?
Michael Fisher. So I was thinking about this for him, and he was thinking about certain characters in this, all happening in this small town, but my imagination kept going outside of town, and I kept thinking about this house, like this abandoned house outside of town, and I told him my idea, and he wasn't really interested in going in that direction, but he appreciated my efforts, you know, so, but I just couldn't get this house out of my mind, this kind of abandoned house, or just this somehow, something about this house. In the meantime, I had sent my editor a completely different novel. I had written the entire novel, sent it to her, and right before Thanksgiving, she had called me and said, I'm really sorry, but I'm not interested in the novel.
This would have been your fourth?
This would have been my fifth novel. This would be the fifth one.
All right.
And I was like, devastated for about, you know, 15 minutes during the whole phone conversation. And then I, something in me said to her, well, what are you looking for? I had never asked her, you know, I'd always thought I had to come up with these stories. And
Totally original.
I just couldn't even ask, you know. And she said, well, what about, you know, something with the same, you know, maybe the quality of Night Flying, which was my first book. And I thought, I don't really know. I'll think about that. And so the next morning, I kind of went to bed, and I just sort of, you know, I think I was just praying, you know, I just was hoping for the inspiration, because I was really like, she wasn't interested in the other book. And the next morning I woke up, and I just had this feeling of this place on the lake. I had spent a lot of time that summer up in the islands, Champlain Islands. So I had this feeling of the islands, and I had this thing about this house that wouldn't go away. So I went home to visit my family in upstate New York for Thanksgiving. And in November, that drive is very bleak, can be. And there's these great houses along the way. There's this one house in particular on the New York State Thruway that's been there since I was a kid. And it's like a haunted house. It's been always been abandoned, always been kind of leaning to one side. And my brother and I used to call it the haunted house when we were kids there, and it was still there. And so I just started like letting that work in my imagination. And when I got back from that vacation, I just started writing. And I had thought about this older woman, this widow, and I had gotten this name, Wisteria. So with Bird, it was this gradual thing of just this feeling of the house, the feeling of the place. And then this widow kind of popped in, Wisteria, the name came out. So I started out, Wisteria did not care where I had come from, nor where I had been. So that just kind of, and I had this feeling of not any particular time period. There's no time period in this book. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit like a fable in that way. But it seemed like, you know, maybe mid-1800s, just in the way that the speech was, because the language is different in this book than my other books. It's a very old-fashioned kind of speech.
Right.
And so I just kind of, that's how it came. It came from helping a friend and, you know, my other novel not working out. This like fascination with this old house, and also just this. I remember feeling when I got off the phone with my editor, like, you know, maybe should I keep writing? It was just that moment of like, maybe, you know.
And you already had 4 books out at that time.
Yeah, 4 books. But I just thought, you know, I don't know, maybe I should do something else. But I didn't want to, and I think I had real desire. Like, no, I love writing stories, and I know that there's another story that's on the verge, you know. So I think it was just that belief, you know, that hope, and then, you know, kind of just said that little prayer, like, just for clarity.
So it came. That's it's wonderful that you were able to bounce back so quickly. I think I would have taken at least a month.
Yeah.
I'd be very sorry for myself.
I know. Well, I remember on the phone, I was just, my heart was just aching, you know. And then it's amazing how something I just knew I had. There was something else that was going to open up. Yeah. And it was really wonderful that she never took that book, because it was an interesting story, but it was not as fun a book to write. This book was really a joy to write.
Well, maybe it freed you up to fail in a way.
It did. It was like, well, I have nothing to lose really here. I mean, like, I even asked her at one point, do you want me to write another book? She's like, well, it's kind of up to you, you know? So I really felt like, really, it's kind of this wide open thing. I'm really beginning again, because I could just have fun, and there's really, maybe you're right. There's something about that. And it actually started a relationship with my editor that I'd never had before, because she's a senior editor at Random House, and she's very busy. And I was always a little intimidated, you know, to ask her things, because, you know, she's the senior editor. And but it started this whole collaboration. I mean, she was really excited about this story and really helped me different times to say, you know, I'd like to know more about this character. Could you explore that a little bit more? And we had never done that before. Mm-hmm. I went to go see her for the first time in New York. Had never met her. So this whole book was about collaboration. Started out by helping a friend, and it came about to help me completely and my editor as well. So
that's great. This is a really good time, I think, for you to read from Bird, if you would.
Sure. Yeah, sure.
Okay, so this is Rita Murphy reading from her new book, Bird, which comes out actually today. The day I'm interviewing her is October 14th, and it's published by Random House.
Yes. This is chapter 1. Wisteria did not care where I had come from or where I had been, nor did she care that I was small and delicate in nature and easily carried off by the wind. She cared only that I stay with her in the great house she occupied on the eastern shore of Lake Champlain. I came to Bourne Manor on a bright morning in the month of February, just as the winter snows had settled in for good along the shore, taking up residence in the open fields and across the cliffs. In those days, I was often picked up by the wind and left in odd places because of it, blown into the tops of low trees or cut up in the scrubs or briars, though never before had I been taken so close to the turbulent waters of a lake. Knocked hard by a gust, left tangled in the branches of one of the lone elms that skirted the bay, I remembered little of what had come before, only a series of faceless relatives and small drafty houses, only a hollow feeling of something that had once been but was no longer. From that lonely elm I was retrieved by 2 of Wisteria's hounds, pulled from the branches by their strong jaws. I was lost, and Wisteria found me. Or perhaps the manor itself found me, beckoning me to its gates on that February morning. The home of Wisterio Barrows was a looming structure that had the appearance of having grown sideways out of the earth. Though firmly anchored, it listed dramatically to the left like an old tree turned by the wind, its foundation clinging to the red stone cliffs for support as a tern might cling in a storm. The manor was 4 stories in height, with 3 turrets, 2 balconies, and a widow's walk at its pinnacle. Its once ivory paint had been stripped by rough weather, returning it to its natural gray clapboard, and Wisteria had left it so. There were 22 rooms in the manor, 5 staircases, 10 fireplaces, and 1 slender tower on the west wing that held my room, a room with vaulted ceilings and windows that looked out over the harbor and across to the wild Adirondack Mountains. A grand place, my room. And indeed, Bourne Manor itself was grand. No grander house could you find in the islands or on the mainland. Though as grand as the manor was, it was always a lonely place, destined from its beginning to be set apart from all other houses. Some said the manor harbored an ill-gotten fortune within its walls, which carried a terrible and irreversible curse. Others believe that its foundation stones, having been laid crooked, forever doomed it to a perverse and tragic end. Whichever story was true, Bourne Manor knew little happiness within its walls. The 4 generations of grim ancestral portraits lining the main stairwell bore testimony to this, as did the vacant and lifeless rooms that towered over the cliffs. The manor's ballroom had never been used for dancing, as far as I knew, nor the parlors for entertaining guests, for no guests ever came there. To those on the outside, it was a strange and mournful dwelling that made for ghost stories, of which there were many, and for good cause, for although no one ever perished unnaturally within its walls that I knew of, the manor, set out on its own as it was, battered by the wind, invited the spirits of those long departed, and of those who roamed the shores in search of a warm fire, as it had invited me, the lost and aimless. To these, Bourne Manor gave its shelter.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
It's a great beginning.
Good.
And before I forget to say something, it's got a wonderful cover. I love the cover of this book. Who's the artist?
The artist is Fernando Juarez, and he's from Spain.
Okay.
And the interesting thing about the cover is normally I never see the cover until it's sent to me, complete, the book is complete. But from the beginning, I was involved with the process of the cover. I was asked to help to choose the artist and sent some of his work, and I loved his work is so beautiful. It's kind of surreal in a way, and beautiful. And then I was sent the preliminary pencil sketch and made comments about it, and then a color sketch, and I actually added the house leaning because it was straight, and a few things with the tree wrapping around the cover. So anyway, it was really nice to be able to give feedback and to be part of it. Was really fun. And
yeah,
of course, and he's an amazing artist.
This is one of those covers that you see in the bookstore, and it really is the kind that makes you just want to pick up the book and open the book, and that's what you want.
That's great.
It's just wonderful.
That's good to hear.
You talked about a minute ago about a book in between this and your last published book having been rejected by your editor. And I because this show is for writers as well as readers, I think that's really interesting. In this time period, we hear so much about how difficult it is. It used to be that if you got your first book published, then it was really kind of an easy road. But you know, you hear stories that's not true anymore, and it certainly sounds like it's not.
Yeah,
that there's just
right.
No guarantee from one book to the next.
Sure, yeah, that's really true. And, you know, like I said, probably in that case it was good.
In your case it was a blessing.
It was a blessing, and I think it opened up a communication with my editor. I think, you know, she was honest with me exactly what she felt and what she was looking for, and I was able to, you know, really understand what she was saying. And it's interesting because that book, the book that was rejected, was very dark. In fact, I'd never written a book like that before.
Hmm.
And I think it helped me to tap into that a place that I don't write from often, which is just that sort of the B side, you know, that darker side. And there is that element in Bird that I think makes the story so much more interesting, because there is this little bit of this sinister mm-hmm. edge to it. And I think so writing that previous book, I think it helped me to, you know, maybe go to that darker place.
Right.
And also to maybe just re-engage my sense of, like, I really love to write. because maybe I had become a little complacent and like, oh, I'll just write another novel, just write another novel. Oh, you're not interested in that one? Well, do I really, you know? But okay, I really want to love, and I think too, when I wrote that last novel, I didn't love the process like I did when I was writing Bird. And I think that's how I've been able to tell when it's a good story, because I'm excited about it and I love it. And if I'm not excited about it and I don't love it, then from, I think what I've learned at this point is I won't go and spend time with it, you know?
Right. It's a nice story for other people to hear who might be frustrated or having a hard time getting a certain book published.
Yes,
might
right.
Be time to move on or look at it as an exercise in what comes next.
Right, and maybe. I think just, and also I think what it came to me too is like that question of like, okay, even if I didn't have another book published ever, would I still write? And I think that's what came to me. I still love to write, and I'll continue to write whatever. That's how I felt when I wrote my first book.
Sure.
I'm just going to write it, and who knows what's going to happen. Of course, that's how most writers write. We just write with that faith that maybe someday it will be out there in the world in a way, in a form. But still, the writing of it is, that's really the... That's what it's about.
There's this joy of discovery that's not unlike reading, and nobody gets paid for reading.
That's right. And so if it's published or not published, I mean, of course it's wonderful to have a book published. I know that that is a wonderful thing. But it's really the inner growth that's happening, I think, the process of it that's great.
More than one of your books have dealt with flight, real or metaphorical, and it seems very appropriate for teens, sort of in both senses. And in this book... there's not flight so much as being blown away.
Right.
But can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, I never actually had, I know a lot of people have flying dreams. I never really had a flying dream until after I wrote Night Flying, one that I remembered at least. So, but I think I've always had that desire to fly. And I don't really actually love to fly in airplanes. I will, but it's not my favorite thing to do. So, but I've always loved the idea, probably a lot of people feel it, just to fly freely would be such an amazing thing. And I had, when I was writing Night Flying, I had a friend who had these amazing flying dreams where she would be, you know, exhausted the next morning because she'd been flying all night long. And in her dreams were so vivid, she would get caught up in telephone lines and trees. And it was so real. And she would tell me her dreams. And I know that was part of the inspiration for my first book, for Night Flying. I was intrigued by that idea. And I think metaphorically, too, especially with Bird, it's not so much that she flies. She does learn how to negotiate the wind, and so I guess in a way that is like flying. But I think it's more a metaphor for myself of living a life more from the sense of, you know, spirit as opposed to being embedded in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that's so much of my own journey, and then therefore it comes out in the stories of trying to not to be caught up in so much in the world's, but listening to an inner guidance.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe that's why that theme comes forward.
Often your novels grapple with stories of powerful women who are discovering their own power.
Mm-hmm.
And it almost sounds like that's a little bit what's happening here. She's sort of learning how to trust herself. Is that, would you say that's true?
Definitely. Yeah. And I think trusting that... that quality inside that is not often recognized, I think, sometimes in the world or the outer world, that we all have. But I think just trusting one's true nature, even if it doesn't seem to fit with what we're being told.
In your last novel, Looking for Lucy Buick, you evoke Dickens a couple of times. First, from the start, your main character, Lucy, is looking to escape from a difficult family situation, which is so true in Dickens. And then also, her ghost aunts visit her to offer her varying pieces of advice. Not always very good advice, but about how to proceed. I just think these were wonderful ways to speak to teens about their transition to independence and where to look for help. And it did remind me of Dickens, so I thought I'd just mention it here. Was that any sort of purposeful move on your part?
I think it was just my own experience of, trying to quiet the voices of family.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, in a way, that novel of all of them was probably most autobiographical, because I did actually have a difficult time in my family when I did leave I did sort of break away from family and wasn't in contact with them for about 3 years. They didn't know where I lived, or I was in absolutely no contact purposefully, and was a really challenging time, and I realized that how much they were just part of my, so much part of my life, and that, you know, even if I tried to put them out of my mind, you know, just the voices of my, you know, my family, they were constantly with me. So the aunts really represent that, you know, the voices of family that were, you know, always with me, even though I wasn't in contact with them. And of course, and there was a great healing with my family, and since that time, of course. So it's been really great. And but at the same time, during that separation was when I really began to write. And I just think I wrote somehow from that pain of that separation from family and all of the things that were going on at the time. So the aunts were...
Right.
My grandmother had, I think, 8 sisters.
Okay.
9. There were 9 children, 7 sisters. So I had a lot of great aunts, actually.
Right.
And I was a little bit fascinated with them. But so all of that, you know, all of their beliefs and all of their fears and all those things, just being able to kind of see them separate from myself. And, you know, but also I do love Dickens. I love The Christmas Carol is one of my favorite stories, and I read it every year. And so I'm sure that was, that's inside of me, like so many stories are. And I'm always kind of interested in that, you know.
Yeah.
And also just listening, you know, okay, taking in all those ideas and beliefs and then, you know, weighing them against what you really feel is true for, for yourself. So, yeah.
I enjoyed this about night flying. Early on in Night Flying, we hear that Mama said it's best to stay close to home and not take chances. which, you know, of course leads the reader to wonder if these are going to be important issues later, you know, staying safe, you know, not taking chances. And also, there's the whole theme early on that one can't have any doubt. You're not supposed to have any doubt. So I'm wondering, do you ever sort of pop in these ideas at the beginning of a novel sort of to... establish a little bit of foreshadowing about what is going to be happening or what is going to be important to the character? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. In fact, I was just looking at Bird because I just received it not that long ago, and I was looking at the beginning part, and I thought, oh, wow, that really came out later on in the story. But I don't think that I'm really thinking. I must have a sense of what the character's you know, quest or their struggle is fairly early on, that it's coming out in those first first pages. But I don't think, it's not like I go back and put it in purposefully.
So on revision, you don't go in and say, okay, well, I'm just going to mention this now.
You know, maybe in some cases, like some details that are important, but like something like that, that was so much about the relationship between Georgia, the main character, and her mother of, you know, and that's my relationship with my own mother, is that, you know, stay, you know, be safe. Don't go out and do these, you know, dangerous things. Don't go out. You know, the world is a frightening place. And, you know, just all those messages I think
stay
I got
here, let
from
me
my
protect
mom.
You.
Yeah, let me protect you. And, of course, maybe that's just common with most mothers. I'm sure I do that somehow with my son. So, you know, that was just part of my relationship. And, of course, Georgia, the main characters in a lot of books, are some part of me.
Sure.
So I think that was just a natural part. And the part about doubt, I think, was just that... for me, it has been to really not have a lot of doubt, to really trust and to not listen to that voice of doubt when that comes, because it can be very strong. It can stop me from doing so many things, and to, you know, to really go more to that place of trust and love and not listening to the fear and not listening to the doubt. And I think it was symbolic, and that's how you can fly. That's how you can be truly free, is to not be bound by this fear.
What particular qualities do you feel are most helpful for a writer of teen fiction, specifically to young adults?
Well, I just think it's such an amazing time. When I was that age, I really felt that to have some kind of a sense of something bigger was so important, to not get lost along the way and all those things that can pull our attention away from our own journey and clarity. So I just think at this time it is really important to be able to just help young readers to begin to develop their own vision for themselves, you know, that they can carry with them. It seems important to encourage young readers to have that clarity
right.
and for themselves.
Did you write when you were a teenager?
I didn't.
No?
I didn't start writing until I was almost 30.
Okay.
After my son was born, I took that class at the University of Alabama. Before then, I hadn't really written. I think I was always, I love stories. I was always interested in stories. I just never thought I could write. I just thought writers were people who were in this whole different, you know, species. You know, you had to be born into a family of writers or something. I don't know when I knew I ever wrote, so I just thought that would, that just seemed really far away, you know. But so no, I didn't write. But I did go to a school. I went to an all-girls Catholic high school, but it was very, I really loved it in that it was very creative. It was there were a lot of arts involved in the school, and we had a lot of nuns, but they were very worldly nuns. Like were nuns that traveled, they had lived in Central America and all over the world. So they were well traveled, and they were very independent women in a sense. So during that time, I was able to explore, you know, dance. I love to dance, so dance and doing some creative writing, which I did do, just as part of my schoolwork. And but I just knew I wanted to do something creative. I had no idea that I would ever write at the time, but something creative.
Do you think the pacing of a teen novel differs very much from that of an adult novel? Do you feel like you move a little faster, or you heighten certain things?
Sometimes I just think I'm writing the story, and I'm not as aware if I'm writing for young adults. I'm just writing the story.
You're just writing the story for yourself.
And I think the thing is the why I write for young adults is that's where I am. Like, I'm kind of a very young voice, inner voice. I mean, like, it comes out that way. I'm still probably, you know, grappling with some of these issues myself. So I'm just writing my own stories, you know, in a way, and they fit into the young adult journey.
Who are your favorite authors?
Well, I do love Dickens, and I do love Louisa May Alcott. I lived in Central America for a while, so I really loved writers. I love Isabel Allende and Gabriel Garcia Marquez.
Uh-huh.
And I love the stories where I think, you know, the reality, you know, the world, you know, there's this kind of question of, you know, you could sit down at for breakfast and open up the cupboard and your you know, great dead grandmother sitting there giving you advice. You know, there's something so intriguing to me about that. So I love that. And
now, imagine you loving Alice Hoffman. Do you read
her? Yes, I do love Alice Hoffman. I read her when I was, like, first out of college, and I could read whatever I wanted to. I found myself, you know, just attracted to writers like, you know, fiction and,
yeah, magical realism.
Well, yeah, right. That was always kind of intriguing to me.
Yeah, yeah.
When I went home for to visit, I visit my family frequently in upstate New York, and I went to the local library that I went to as a kid, and I was not a big reader as a child. I watched a lot of television, unfortunately. We don't have a television, so I don't watch television now, but I watched a lot of movies, and I did not read very much. But the books I did read, I went to the back to the library, and I looked up some of, like, the little, you know, early books that I read, and like Judy Blume, and but, you know, just kind of oftentimes they were stories about little people that I loved. I think that's probably common for children, like little people who can do great things. And current writers, there's a lot of great young adult writers. Kate DiCamillo,
right. Do you have an agent?
I don't.
No.
I never. I think because I my novel was published through a contest, and that I had a lot of support from my editors, and I just never saw the need to have an agent, I guess, because oftentimes, you know, my husband or someone will say, you know, maybe you should have an agent to help you, like, negotiate contracts, because I know initially I signed contracts, I had no idea what I was doing, and I just trusted that it would work out, and I was just honored that someone was giving me a book contract. But I don't know, I think it intimidated me a little bit to involve an agent in the process. I had no idea even how to begin to look for someone. Yeah. So, no, I never did it.
Well, it sounds like now you've developed this trust with your editor, and so it may be even less necessary.
I think that's what has been for me. If I felt my first editor was a young woman, and we just became very good friends. I mean, you know, just in the relationship of editor and writer. So I just always felt I could ask her anything. She would always give me as much advice as she could, you know, feel free to do. And when she left, she had... she became pregnant and left to go home and be with her kids. And I had another editor I was really close to, and she left to go to another publishing house. So, but when I had those relationships, I never felt a need for it. And then now, since my relationship with my editor is so much closer to
Yeah.
I just haven't felt the need.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think, and maybe you don't know because it hasn't been your experience, but for writers that aren't winning contests in order to be first published, do you think that they can approach editors directly, or do you think that they need to have an agent in order to make that first contact in the publishing for young adults? I know that in adult publishing, you absolutely have to have an agent, or you can't approach anybody.
Right, right.
For the most part.
I'm not sure what it's like now, because I do feel things have changed a little bit but since I started, but I do usually always tell people to enter contests, mainly because it's the way that the publishing houses look. They're actually going to read.
Right.
At least they'll read the first page of a book, because the reason for the contest is to solicit. They want manuscripts, so they're open to receiving them. So it is a great way to get in the door. But if you don't do that, I did send out some ideas for picture books early on before I wrote my first book, and I would just try to research. I don't know if this would work, but I read a book that was written by a person who was an editor, and I loved the book. And I wrote to him to tell him how much I liked the book, which I really did like the book. And I said, "Would you be open to my sending you an idea for a picture book?" And he was. And I sent him an idea, or maybe two ideas, and he wrote me some really nice rejection letters. But at least he wrote me a rejection letter. I thought that was really encouraging that he said, "Yes, you can send me something." I don't know if that's
here's feedback.
True for, mm-hmm. I think maybe smaller, Random House is big. There's so many imprints and Random House, you know, so it's a big place, but maybe smaller publishing houses. I think everyone's always looking for a really good story. Mm-hmm. And I think if you have a really great story that you believe in, that I remember I knew nothing about publishing when I first wrote Nightfly. And I think that was good because I didn't realize, no one had told me, oh, it's really hard to get a book published or any of those things. So I just was, I think my naivete was helpful because I thought, oh, this is a great story. I love this story. They're going to love it. And I didn't have, you know, I didn't set up a lot of boundaries, you know. So I just think if you love it, but it's, I would just try to listen to, you know, some good ideas about how to, you know, talk to people. I think just mm-hmm. making connections. There's so many wonderful writers in Vermont writing for children and also for adults. And I have found very generous to share their experience and maybe even, you know, give you some suggestions about know, contests or publishing houses that might be open to accepting unsolicited manuscripts mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. things like that. I think making as many connections as you can or being involved in the library. I think there's a Writers Guild. I'm not sure.
At the Fletcher Free Library? Or
I think there's a Vermont...
Oh, the League of Vermont Writers.
Oh, right, the League of Vermont Writers.
Yeah.
And there's the Society of Children's Book Writers, and they, if you become a member, they have a lot of different contests and, mm-hmm. and encouragement and things like that.
Okay.
So,
what are you working on now?
Well, I had an idea to work. I just wanted to do something different and something fun, so I'm actually just playing around with the idea for a younger age group, like first independent kind of readers.
Mm-hmm.
level, and I can't say what it is because it's sort of my policy because it's kind of like I have to kind of hold it inside,
sure.
you know, and if I tell too many people then I'm not interested anymore.
Well,
so, but just younger.
As much like magic in their books as you do has got to be superstitious.
So I'm just like, well, I think I'll just keep it to myself. But yeah, a little bit younger, and then I'm also working on an idea for another young adult novel. I have a contract for altogether 6 novels at Random House, so I have one more within that contract for a young adult. So I'm just exploring some ideas for that. I'm not sure what's uh-huh. going to happen, but a little bit, it's going to be different. I'm not sure in what way, but...
Okay. Not dark, though.
Maybe a little dark. Well, maybe a little... maybe. I don't know. I really don't know yet, because it's just starting.
Okay.
I haven't decided yet, but I'm just playing around, and we'll see.
My last question is always the same. I'm curious, what advice might you have for writers who are stuck in their work or need help moving forward with a piece of writing?
I think there's so many ideas. We have so many ideas that, and I think if you feel like you're stuck, I wouldn't get stuck in the idea of being stuck because I just think that can make you stuck. It's just believing that you could be.
Just psyching yourself out.
Yeah, because I really think that it's limitless ideas. And just to trust that the ideas will come in the time. I don't think that that I think sometimes trying to force an idea or trying to feel like I have to write something or I have to write it in a certain time period it's really true. I just think trusting that the ideas will come to you and just enjoying the process, mm-hmm. not taking it too seriously, like just playing, just looking at it as just playing, like a child would, you know, say, I just feel like writing a story today, or I'm going to dance, I'm going to jump on the bed. I mean, just that playfulness, I think, can help you from getting too serious about it or even thinking that you could be stuck.
Children don't get stuck playing.
No, I think the only thing that can get stuck is your thought. It's just your own thinking that you could be stuck. And I just think, for myself, I've always felt that I need to keep it fun. If it ever starts to get too serious or start thinking about, oh, is this going to be successful? Am I going to make money doing this? Or am I going to, you know, try to prove something? You know, that I can't write from that place. It just has to always remain just like this fun thing that I do. And just to watch my thinking always, to just know that there's a limitless supply of ideas and it's going to come to you in the right time, in the right place. And it might just be a feeling. It might just be this feeling of excitement about something or listening to someone's conversation, going to an art gallery or music. Or just kind of, you know, I think if you're feeling that way, maybe just going out into the world and, mm-hmm. and just being open to all of the possible inspiration out there.
All right. Well, thank you very much for talking with me.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Rita Murphy. Next week, tune in again at 9 a.m., our new time, for our new one-hour time slot, to hear an interview with author, musician, and Champlain College Professional Writing Program Director, Tim Brooks. Write the Book is brought to you in part by Autism Support Daily, Vermont's first online support group and host of the annual Autism Walk each October at Battery Park. For more information, visit autismsupportdaily.com or call 985-8773. This next segment of the show, the Write the Book prompt, began during our last show 2 weeks ago. It consists of a simple exercise to help you move forward with your own writing. This week's prompt was inspired by the interview you heard today with author Rita Murphy, who tends to approach all of her work by free writing. She's been lucky enough not to find herself stuck very often, but for the rest of us, I offer the following idea. In our conversation, Rita described a house along the New York Thruway that became her inspiration for the crooked mansion in her new book, Bird. In your own hometown, was there a house like this, an abandoned or otherwise frightening structure with the reputation for being haunted? If not, was there a house you always noticed and wondered about for whatever reason? Think about that place for a few minutes. Try to remember the look of it, the landscaping, any gossip around its history. Using these thoughts and memories as a point of creative entry, write in a notebook or on your computer for 20 minutes without stopping. If you're so inspired, write for more than 20 minutes. Don't censor yourself, and try not to think at all about where this exercise might go. If you find yourself writing about something other than a house, that's fine. Go where your mind wants to take you. Let the exercise be fun, and try to enjoy it as a child enjoys playing. A copy of this prompt will be included in the description to this week's podcast on iTunes and at writethebook.podbean.com. Good luck with this exercise, and please listen next week for another. If you're interested in sharing Write the Book with out-of-town friends, let them know they can stream it live every Saturday morning at 9 at www.theradiator.org. Archived episodes of Write the Book are also available on iTunes and at writethebook.podbean.com as free podcasts. If you have comments about the show or events for next week's Bookworms calendar, please send an email to writethebook@gmail.com. This has been Write the Book. I'm Shayla Shapiro, and you're listening to The Radiator, 105.9 FM, WOMMLP, in Burlington, Vermont.
Mm-hmm.